Welcome along to this bite-sized edition of Tax and Lunch. Thanks for joining me. I'm Vincent Licciardi. You're listening to the podcast for tax advisors to high net worth individuals, wealthy family groups, and private clients. I'm really excited that you're joining me for this episode. Don't forget to subscribe and share this podcast with your team so they can also gain the inside perspective. Let's listen in. Thank you for joining with me. My name is Vincent Licciardi and I'm a tax partner at HWL Ebsworth Lawyers in Melbourne. Today, I'd like to run you through for this Tax and Lunch session. It's been 2 or 3 months now since we last got together. The ATO you would have probably experienced in recent times, the last 4 to 6, 7 weeks, the ATO has been very much following up on outstanding tax debts for clients. Now, they've been doing that by and large, particularly with what's in the media, and a couple of my clients have experienced this as well, with director penalty notices. I've also been assisting clients who have been issued with stat demands to companies. So the ATO is certainly, there's no doubt that they have ramped up their debt collection activity. But there was a particular type of ATO option that is available, which in some instances they may use, and usually we'll get into when this happens, but the specific option that they have available to them is what's called a security bond demand. So in effect, the ATO can demand of your clients that the client provides the ATO with security. And the security that is provided is very much consistent with what you might provide a bank. For example, by way of a mortgage over land, the ATO has the ability to issue a demand to your clients to provide that type of security. The ATO can set out the type of security that it wants, the value of the security. And if your clients don't comply with that type of notice, the ATO can apply to the federal court to force your clients to provide that security. And if they don't, there are penalties for defaulting. So we'll get into some of that shortly. So thank you again. As I say, if you thought director penalty notices were a powerful tool available to the ATO, then you'll be astonished at the end of this session what else the ATO has in its kit bag. As always, very brief housekeeping. I'll be circulating the certificates in the coming days. I've muted you all, so you shouldn't hear any birds and dogs in the background. If by chance we have some technical difficulties again, please dial back in. I've had some challenges this morning. And as always, this presentation is not legal advice, but in the context of these types of notices that the ATO can issue to your clients, and you'll see this is really the bigger end by and large, it is absolutely crucial that your clients get full legal tax advice on the options that are available to them. You will see that there are ways that we put in place in order to, in effect, stop the ATO whilst providing security, but stopping the ATO by way of, for example, a deed. And that way, they will stop further debt collection against your clients whilst, for example, audits are happening, objections are still occurring, etc. And if you have any questions in the coming days, I'll be circulating the slides, but you're certainly most welcome to give me a call as well. So the few things that we're going to touch on today, clearly the bond notice itself, what is it, how is it used, and why does the ATO use it? You'll see it's used in very specific circumstances. What happens if a client doesn't comply with the notice? What can go wrong? But also too, if your client does decide to comply with the notice, how can you in effect stop the ATO in its tracks to give you and your client some breathing room on what is usually the substantive dispute, which is about how much tax might be payable, the type of CGT event, etc. Some tips and traps, including some common mistakes that I have seen. Now, there's not too many of these because you will notice as we get into this, the bond notice is a very broad power and it is very difficult to have it set aside, but we'll work through some of that, in particular, the tips and traps. And as always, if you have questions, please type them into the chat box. You're welcome to post them directly to me. Just mute everyone again. You're welcome to post them directly to me or alternatively to the group as a whole. So first of all, the specific power. This is the power that's available to the ATO in Schedule 1 of the TAA. And we'll go through mainly the couple items that are in red. I'm not going to read the whole section verbatim, but the bond notice can be used by the ATO for an existing tax liability that has crystallized. So for example, your client's got an amended assessment, the audit's done, or the ATO can use the notice for an anticipated future liability. So the ATO can demand security even before the liability has crystallized. So the audit might still be in its very early phase. The audit's not finished. The dispute really hasn't even kicked off, but the ATO can use this power. There are broadly two limbs, two times or two different occasions where the ATO can use the power of the bond notice. The first is where, in effect, the client is setting up or establishing a business in Australia, and that business is really temporary. Excuse me. Now, we did see a case like this in the context of property developers. So Fastbet, for example, was a case where the ATO, in effect, because of poor past compliance by the controller of a family trust in a company, decided to use the bond notice for a temporary enterprise. So for a finite period of time, this property development would happen, and the ATO used the notice in that case. The second option that's available to the ATO is really a very broad, almost unchecked option, where they can use the bond notice if, having regard to the circumstances, it's appropriate to do so. So that will include things like, at some point, did your client during or before an audit take steps to dissipate assets or leave Australia? In some instances, it will also include, as I've mentioned, poor past compliance with GST obligations, income tax obligations, FBT. It's a very broad notice that could be used. And bear in mind, this is not a circumstance where the ATO would use the notice if there is actual evidence, for example, of asset dissipation. They don't need actual evidence of an asset having been sold. So for example, I was part of a case where the client put their property, real property, so just a block of land with a house on the market to sell. The ATO got wind of that. They asked the client to remove the property from sale, and the client did not do that in time. And so the ATO was then concerned about dissipation of assets, and they issued a bond notice. So there doesn't need to be actual evidence of dissipation, but simply you can see there, it really, the ATO needs to have reason to believe. So they need a reasonable suspicion that something's gone on here. And that will usually be enough when you look at all the facts for the ATO's notice to withstand scrutiny. A couple things just to be aware of. The ATO can ask for effectively any form of security. Most of the time, what I have seen, they ask for a mortgage over land because it's nice and safe, obviously, can be realized relatively quickly. And the value of that security will be able to be ascertained by the ATO relatively quickly. Equally, ASX listed shares would probably also be okay, bank guarantee. It's unlikely the ATO would accept, for example, security over unlisted proprietary limited company, just a private company, for example. And the ATO can ask for security at any time in the process. So it might be the audit's just started, might be the audit's ended and the liability's been crystallized. And they can ask for security multiple times. So for example, the audit started and the ATO auditors estimate the liability is $10 million. They then gather further information and work out it's actually not 10 million, it's now 15 million. Based on some further evidence they've collected. In that instance, just let a couple more people in. In that instance, the ATO might have issued its first notice for $10 million in security. And then once it has updated information via its auditors, it can issue another one. And the further one would be for another $5 million. So effectively, it gets security over the whole 15. A couple things about the notice. I've already touched on a couple of these points. The specific notice that is issued, it must include a number of things under the tax law. Why the ATO requires the security, the amount, how the client is to give security. So it might be by way of mortgage, as I mentioned, first ranking. It should also mention the time for compliance. Usually the ATO, depending on the circumstances, it can be anywhere between, say, 10 days to 5 weeks, depending on what they want, or anywhere in between. Now, if your client gets one of these notices, and I'll show you a couple examples in a second of what they look like, very much a formal notice, like production of documents. The first thing that you should be considering is a request under Section 13 of the ADJR Act. That is a request to the ATO to produce reasons for issuing the notice. And it's a fulsome document that they produce. And that is produced by and large with the assistance, obviously, of the ATO's legal team, but it is signed off by the person who issued the notice. So the relevant ATO officer in the debt area. My experience is that those documents that you get back, the reason for decision to issue the notice, can be very, very useful for then determining things that your client might not have actually told you. For example, the ATO's more aware of your client's circumstances than you are as the advisor. Equally, it will assist you to determine whether the ATO had a reasonable basis to issue the notice, which is one of the key ways to have the notice challenged and set aside. Very, very few. I haven't come across almost any instances where it's actually been set aside, but that document will assist you to determine whether there's a basis to do so. Now, in my experience, there are two key situations where the ATO uses the notice. The first one is against non-resident clients, for the simple reason that it can be hard for the ATO to collect from overseas and to secure assets and recover the tax debt via international treaties. That can be very difficult for the ATO. So it's much simpler to issue a notice and force the client to comply. Whether they do or not is a different story, and we'll cover that in a second. And the second time that they use this is usually during the audit process as a preliminary step to commence recovery, bearing in mind that this type of notice does not require the liability to have crystallized. Whereas, for example, garnishees, DPNs, bankruptcy proceedings all require the underlying tax liability to have crystallized. So this is a very powerful way that the ATO can start its debt collection even before the liabilities come home. And so what will usually happen, the ATO will take preliminary steps whilst the audit is running. And it's quite possible that by the time you're in a dispute about the substance of the notice, the audit might have finished. And so the amended assessments are out and the ATO has effectively turned what is uncrystallized into a real liability, but they've already started to collect security. They've already started to collect the debt. And so this is an opportunity for them to do that well in advance of what they can normally do. And lastly, on this point, I've seen some case law on by way of quantum, where, for example, Fastbet, the ATO issued a notice where the liability was only $350,000. So not all that much in the scheme of things. But in that case, the ATO was concerned because the controller of the property development group had had prior poor compliance. And so the ATO issued this notice. In the cases that I've been a part of, the bond notices are usually issued in the tens of millions very significant cases where the ATO is trying to collect liabilities. I won't go through this slide in detail. These are just examples that I wanted to share with you. Obviously, you can have a look at them. By and large, they cover off on circumstances that I've already touched on. Now, you can zoom in on your screens here, but this is what the notice looks like. It's very similar, as I mentioned, to a notice to produce documents or to attend and give evidence. And you will see that obviously addressed to the client, demands the client give security, and then sets out the specific dot points that are referred to in the Act. So here you will see the ATO was chasing approximately $24.5 million. And this is a case that was before the federal court last year. Comes, as you'll see there, comes with a cover letter, the actual demand, and then there's a third page, which I'll bring you to, which sets out the circumstances if the client fails to comply. This is just another example with that third page, and you'll see the ATO sets out the repercussions if the client does not hand over security. Now, practically speaking, what tends to happen here is the client, if they are not necessarily proactive, the ATO would have issued one of these notices and the client defaults. The time for compliance is not normally long. So it could be 10 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, et cetera. The client doesn't bring it to your attention. They default. And that default gives the ATO the power to go to the federal court and to get the security from your client. Now, what I found is that that process by the ATO to go to the federal court is difficult for them. It's time consuming, it's costly. Most of the time your client will wear those costs. And so with a default, you have that hanging over the client's head, but most of the time you then negotiate an arrangement with the ATO where you might give certain security, some or all of the security, depending on your client's circumstances, and then you get a deed. And we'll come to that in a second. What the end result is that you should be looking for your clients. Now, just to touch on what happens if the client, they get the notice and they put it in the bin, they're not interested. And sometimes non-resident clients can say, well, the ATO can chase me, I'm located in, pick a country, Guatemala, and so good luck, the ATO comes after me. I don't have a DPN, I'm not interested in going back to Australia, so I don't really care either way what the ATO thinks. There might be some clients that take that approach. The first point is that the starting penalty is not that significant. So the penalty for failing to comply is around $22,000. And so clients who get a bond notice for $25 million probably don't care about the $22,000 liability. But that default then enables the ATO to go to the federal court, as I mentioned. And depending on the scenario, if there are Australian assets, then the ATO will very clearly be able to get those Australian assets and secure them. There are cases, for example, where the state land titles office has been joined, and then there's a court order requiring the mortgage to be given by the registrar to the ATO. Now, in circumstances where the ATO gets its court order, usually it will do a couple things. One, it will get judgment against your client. So then it can go after the client, for example, in respect of bankruptcy proceedings, if it's an individual. The ATO will then get an order to comply with the demand. So to hand over the assets, the security, whatever it might be, security over shares, mortgage, bank guarantee, depending on what the ATO wants. And depending on where other assets are located around the world, the ATO then has treaties to be able to go and enforce the debt against those foreign assets. Now, there are certain countries that won't help the ATO. I won't mention them, but there are countries that won't help. And if your clients have assets in those countries, then that might be a basis to negotiate with the ATO, because the argument effectively is, well, you can go and try and enforce this. The other jurisdiction won't help you. So it's much better to negotiate with us directly. And that will often bring the ATO to the table to arrive at a suitable middle ground. And that's done by way of the deed, which I'll show you in a second. And just to let you know, I had this question on LinkedIn in the last couple of days. What happens if you've got that client from Guatemala and they're not interested in engaging with the ATO? Well, there are ways required by the Tax Act that the court's orders are brought to that person's attention. And so the court can order service by email, service under Hague conventions. It's difficult, there's no doubt about that, it's not simple, but there are ways that that can be done, which will still satisfy the federal court that the process has commenced. And just to let you know as a last point, if the client then fails to comply by handing over security based on the court order, then that's a failure to comply with the court order, which is punishable by way of either relatively small fine, but more significantly, potential jail time. Again, that might not matter if your client's in Australia or not, but certainly if they're here, then that could be a real problem. Now, I'm already getting pressed for time a little bit, so I'm going to skip over questions for now, but please post them in the chat box and I'll come to some more towards the end. Now, responding to the notice itself, so a couple things just to bring to your attention, my suggestions for you. First of all, to review the notice in detail for compliance with the tax law. As I mentioned earlier, there are very specific particulars the ATO has to put in its notice. By and large, they have automated systems that do this, but just in case something goes awry, that can be a basis to say the notice might be invalid. The Section 13 request to get a statement of reasons. My view is that's essential. You shouldn't get away from that. By and large, it's a free request. There's no fee for that the ATO charges, but you should be getting that for your client. Now, whether there's a basis to have the notice set aside, the practical reality is you're raking water uphill. It's very, very difficult. There haven't been too many cases before the federal court challenging the actual notice. And by and large, effectively all of them, the taxpayer has lost. So the ATO has a very, very broad power here. And whilst it's subject to challenge, it's going to be very hard to have it set aside. The clear issue that you need to work out with your clients is their asset position, the type of assets that they have, the location of those assets, including in asset type will be value of those assets, and will the jurisdiction where those assets are located assist the ATO or not? Is the country friendly or is it not friendly? Because if it's not friendly, that might be good for your client. And just lastly on this point, the process here is discretionary. And so the ATO has very wide power and you also have the ability to negotiate. Now, there's no doubt you've got a very bad hand if you're in this scenario, but you should think about, could the client convince the ATO on a 50-50? Could the client convince the ATO that there's a genuine dispute here about the debt? Could the client convince the ATO that this is actually a test case? And those types of circumstances are a basis to have the ATO agree to perhaps defer pursuing the debt under its practice statement. And I've got that there on the screen for you. Now, if you have a look on the right side of the screen here, I've got an example of the front page of the deed. So if you end up with a client in this type of scenario, the best outcome you're probably going to get is to hand over some security to the ATO or come to some sort of arrangement, bank guarantee or something similar, and to get the ATO to agree in a deed that it will not pursue the debt until the substantive dispute is resolved. So you effectively, the ATO puts on hold its debt collection activity for you, and you agree by way of deed. There are very specific parameters that go into the deed, statement of assets most of the time, et cetera. And if your client breaches the deed, the ATO, all bets are off and they can go and collect the debt. But this is probably your best outcome. And the ATO then agrees, you lock them in to not pursue the debt. And then you can run your objection. You can go to the tribunal to fight the substantive liability, penalties and interest. Now, I've gone through this material in quite quickly. As I say, we're pressed for time, but happy to open it up to questions. You can type them in the chat box. You can come off mute. But just a couple tips and traps to raise with you. So if you get one of these notices or your client does, absolutely critical as a starting point that you act quickly. The worst position that you can be in is a default on the notice, because then the ATO automatically has the upper hand, because then they can completely sideline your client and go off to the federal court. And most of the time, the likelihood is, whether you agree or disagree with the ATO or the client's probably done something that has worried the ATO in respect of asset dissipation, potentially leaving the country, putting the property on the market, like I described earlier. So they haven't necessarily taken a step to actually dissipate the asset, but the ATO has interpreted the conduct in that way, and they only need to act reasonably in those circumstances to issue the notice. So absolutely crucial, act fast if you get one of these. You should also remember that the whole debt collection process, the debt itself effectively is unarguable unless you dispute it under Part 4C. But the ATO's ability to collect the debt and what measures they use is discretionary. And so that means the ATO has this whole kit bag of options and it gets to pick and choose. The fact it gets to pick and choose means that you might be able to negotiate with them. And that could be payment plan, it could be some form of security. The ATO might take some of that out of your hands and issue a garnishee. But by and large, those powers are discretionary. The ATO can use them essentially in whatever combination it wants to. And so if you can, you should be negotiating an outcome, probably a deed, upfront with the ATO as cooperatively as you can. And I can't stress that enough, because if you get one of these notices, you are up against it. It's very difficult. And a couple points here, and I think sometimes this is overlooked, and I reiterate this again, confirm with your clients where their assets are located, because you take the wind out of the ATO sails if those assets are located in a country that won't help the ATO recover. Whereas obviously, if the assets are located in Australia, your client's probably done. And lastly, I think this can be a bit of a mistake. If you're going to hand over security, you must be doing it with a deed, because otherwise what can happen is you hand over security, but you haven't locked the ATO into stopping their pursuit of the debt. And so in the worst circumstances, you hand over this security, you've given over a mortgage and you got nothing in return. And so if the ATO can still then use its other powers, which might include bankruptcy, for example, or wind-up notices and these sorts of things. So I absolutely recommend just jumping back a slide here. Get a deed if you can. And most of the time, my experience has been the ATO will certainly negotiate on the deed. It's hard, don't get me wrong, but they generally accept that they need to put a deed in place. So I've had in the past officers say that deed is not required, but it's in the practice statement. So you should be able to get a deed where the ATO stops and in return your client gives security. Now, I'm happy to open up to the floor. I've covered a fair bit in the last 30 minutes or so. I've only got a couple minutes left before I have to let you go. But just a couple things to double check. Be precise about what the client has to do to comply with the notice. So not every notice will be the same. The type of security that's required, the time frame, how the value of the security, how must the client give security? Sometimes it will be a first ranking mortgage, which your client might not have. So then you're negotiating about a second ranking mortgage, for example. But you need to determine precisely what the ATO wants to then work out if your client can meet those requirements. The second point to double check, is there any basis to have the notice set aside? So has the ATO done, in a sense, something wrong from an administrative law perspective that might give your client a chance to have the notice set aside in a federal court? And that's by and large where the ADJR action would happen. And there's also a constitutional writ, which I won't cover. Third point is, does the client dispute the underlying debt? I'm expecting what's going to happen, and I'll leave you on this one. I expect what's going to happen as the ATO starts to collect debts, you'll have a lot more objections.